This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best in sporting analysis from the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, Andy Dunn, Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Tommy Walsh, Darren O'Sullivan and lots more, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Sunday Paper Review
on Off the Ball.
We're listening to the Sunday Paper Review on Off the Ball, not talking history, but that's a little bit of history from Glenn Ryan, in fairness, to start us off. Not bad.
My forte, no.
Yeah, well, listen, I feel more educated as a result, so thanks for that, Glenn. And I know it's the Sunday Paper Review, but look, if often there are good bits of sports writing on Saturdays as well, which we should not ignore. And Roy, you noticed something. It was Kieran Cunningham, wasn't it, in the Irish Times yesterday, and this is a fascinating interview with Pat Gilroy.
Yeah, once or twice a year you get a piece that sort of stops all the clocks. And I think Kieran's interview with Pat certainly is that. I think it's one of the most important pieces that we'll read this year. It's considered, it's thought-provoking, it's radical, it's passionate. Some people will disagree completely. Others will find parts that they agree with. Some context, I mean, Pat Gilroy is a GAA blue blood. He's won an All-Ireland as a player and manager with Dublin. He's managed Dublin footballers and hurlers. But his achievements outside of GAA are significant. He was MD or CEO of a company, Dalkia, employing hundreds of people while still in his 30s. He's been involved in Irish-French chambers of commerce. He's served with IBEC. And he was headhunted and could at this time actually be the man running the GAA. He was headhunted to express interest in the Ard Stourahar Director General job, which he deals with in the piece. But this is, to me, this is sort of like, reading the piece was like looking into a Tiffany's window. There's diamonds of erudition, there's sparkling insight, and he certainly doesn't pull his punches. I'll quote from the piece. He says, "For the first time in 50 years, I'm not involved in anything in the GAA, apart from being a member of Vincent's. It's not the GAA I grew up in. It certainly seems to me that it's heading in a professional direction. The initials of Croke Park are CP, and I call it Caesar's Palace. Now, I was on the Croke Park board, I was on the strategic review committee, and the people who are involved in management there are good people. Peter McKenna could run any stadium. Yes, it does generate revenue. The more money we... But for what? The more money we have, the more we're going to put demands on the players, and then it has to become professional. I think these are all unintended consequences. Man U v Leeds, that's why I call it Caesar Palace, because it's just a revenue generator." And he goes on to talk about the drift to professionalism and about... He talks about certain GAA policies and when he almost became GAA Ard Stourahar. He talked about, that's where my trust in the organisation was damaged. I was approached to put my name forward for it. I said I would if the process was strictly confidential because I had a really good job and really good company at Dalkia. I believed that they leaked my name to show that they had a process with credible candidates. I steered a million miles away from it after that. It's a very wide-ranging piece, and essentially his drift is that this is a requiem for the GAA he grew up with. He's very worried about what he sees as an almost inevitable drift to professionalism. He's delighted with the rule changes in football, but his relationship has clearly soured. And he says, people say all the time that GAA is in a great place. Really, hurling is dying in front of our eyes. We're probably down to a three-team competition. And he makes other, he goes on and on, and there's so many strong points. He even talks about the inevitability of Dublin with the changing demographics and 2 million people potentially living in the Dublin environment, of having to break up away from the county system, which actually I think the headline on the piece is, why are we so wedded to the county system, a British system? Gilroy warns on GAA future. But it's a very provocative piece, and myself and Glenn were talking about it outside, and people will have different views. But I think it starts at a debate that has been ongoing about where the GAA is going. We've talked about the season ending and Croke Park becoming a revenue generator for the GAA, and whether this is an inevitable push towards professionalism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, I suppose the sad element, first of all, is that we're talking about this at this time of year rather than maybe talking about a hurling All-Ireland or a football All-Ireland. And that in many ways is the crux of a lot of the GAA's problems at the moment. Where I see a two-page piece there on a challenge game between New Zealand and South Africa as the centre page in one of the supplements there. That should be a centrepiece on the GAA building up to the biggest day of the year. So part of, I would imagine, Pat's frustrations are how we have seeded the opportunities to promote our games. But Pat has been involved in the GAA all his life, so he should be well aware that things are never going to go the way you want them to go. And certainly when it comes down to looking after your own on an administrative side, it's very difficult to break into that cycle if you're coming in from the outside. I would have played Pat against Pat at under 21 level many years ago, and the input he's has had into the GAA has been huge. I suppose many outside of Dublin would say it's ironic coming from Pat, considering the whole drive towards the ultimate professional without, I suppose, the financial aspect would have began in that era, and the Dubs will always go back to Pat's time over Dublin as being a turning point. I think at the time they may have been training twice a day on occasions. Mm. Now, that was over a week, and there was days that they had off. There's no doubt about that, but it did instill in fellas this whole idea of absolute commitment to a cause, which I would certainly agree with. But outside of that, the crux of what Pat is saying is just really a frustration with the road he sees that the game is going, but not necessarily Gaelic football and hurling, but the association as an association.
Yeah.
And at the top level, yes, there are issues. I'd be very disappointed to think that we're going to lose a character like Pat Gailray to the game. How he's not involved in something in Vincent's, I'd imagine, is just the culmination of many, many years of frustration, and it allows him to illustrate his point. He will be involved again, but when things don't work away at the very top level, we still all have to go back to our club. And our club is the essence of what the association is. And Pat's frustrations ring louder because a man who has been so much encloaked in the GAA is no longer involved, and none of us want that.
I think we've had a magnificent football championship, finishing with the greatest story perhaps of our lifetimes. Yeah. So there's a huge high as a consequence of that, and football is in a very good place. We've maybe had one of the poorer hurling championships in recent times. I think this argument is more about the soul of the GAA and what it represents as an organisation and what the values are. I did a piece with Tom Dempsey, the former Wexford hurler, this week. It's 30 years on this coming Tuesday since Wexford won their All-Ireland, their sole All-Ireland in the last 60 years, that triggered sort of Mayo-like celebrations. And he told a lovely story of when he was a kid in the village, 9 or 10, the night before a match, they'd go down to the phone box and ring Tony Doran. Tony Doran was the superstar of the team. And Tony Doran would pick up the phone and talk to these kids for an hour. And he said that really, you could get close to your heroes, and that stirred. He said it was a sense of this was of the community. He talked of when they won the All-Ireland, he was able to get his father into the dressing room. He said it'd be easier to get into the Kremlin now than to get into a dressing room. And he was actually making the point, even something as simple as match programmes today, that you no longer have the things asking players their favourite food, their favourite movie. He said something simple, but that was entertaining, because we've got so po-faced about something, so serious. Oh, we can't do that. It's a breach of GDPR. And I think there is a feeling amongst a lot of people. I sent Kieran's piece with Pat to a lot of people yesterday. I sent it to a lot of former inter-county players, and they came back with really strong views, saying he's hit the nail on the head. I sent it to Vincent Hogan, whose memoirs come out this week, and Vincent said he's dedicated a huge amount of the book to talking about this subject, that the GAA he grew up with is a GAA he fears is being lost. Certainly there has been progression on a lot of things, and the association's in a healthy position in a lot of ways. But there does seem to be that sense of an elite moving away from the grassroots and a division that I would certainly find distasteful. I still, the debate has been lost on the split season, I understand that, but I still think it's an act of self-sabotage that, as Glenn says, the club championships in most counties are still starting in the same position, and we've created this vacuum, and our primary stadium is now being used to host friendly between Man United and Leeds at a time when we should be marketing and selling Gaelic games, as far as I'm concerned.
That's fair, all fair. Both fair points, lads, I have to say. I definitely encourage people to pick that up if you can. Get a weekend edition of the Irish Times or read it online. Kieran Cunningham's fascinating interview with Pat Gilroy. And as you said, Roy, the title alone gets you.
It certainly does. And as you say, it ties in. Colm O'Rourke's piece today in the Sunday Indo, where he's saying it's time to rethink underage squads. And he talks about the fundamental culture of a club-dominated organisation is being constantly eroded by the addition of more and more county championship, county competitions at all ages. Nobody ever seems to question if this is a direct contravention of what the GAA should be about. He said there's no serious debate has taken place about whether this is damage to the ethos and fabric of the GAA. He said he's talking about hundreds of young players put through an elaborate, ongoing, intensive process to get a few to county senior level. He has an alternate plan for development squads. He'd get rid of them. Again, Glenn has been involved at all levels and has managed at all levels. And I'd be interested in what you feel about sort of development squads relative to the effect it has on club.
I'm probably torn on this point. I see it from a club perspective, not necessarily a club, but maybe a coaching perspective or a management perspective, and also then from a parent's perspective.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt that it's a huge part of young players growing up that they want to make development squads. And the downside to it is the development squad isn't a county team. It's a development squad. And you see many parents who have kids part of a squad of maybe 70 or 80, their young fellas playing county football. You know, and county football is minor, under 20, and senior. And it brings a whole different distinction as to where we are in terms of both development and where we want our players to ultimately get to. And the notion around what the key aspect of this is being lost. It's development. So any child who goes into a county squad, a development squad, it shouldn't be about making them fall into a system of play. It shouldn't be about anything other than developing them, their skills, developing their own self-awareness of their skills, developing an awareness of their S&C development, nutrition, giving them information. And any information that can be given to anybody is a good thing. And once it's coming from somebody who can back it up and knows what they're talking about. So as a parent, I absolutely agree with anything that's going to improve my child in terms of his education or his physical development or his welfare. I'd absolutely be 100% behind. So we can't lose the notion that these squads are just development. From a club perspective, certainly in Kildare, development squads don't get in the way of club training. And I know from speaking to the lads over the years and again being a parent, your club is number one. That you shouldn't be missing a club training session because you have a development squad. They've tried to work closely with the development squad. People have tried to work closely with county boards to free up weekends so that there isn't a clash, that there's a game on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday afternoon after a morning of training. So there is an attempt to try and free people up, and certainly there's no promotion of putting a development squad ahead of a club. Now, on occasions, the development squad can maybe get taken over by somebody who thinks they're over a county team. And that's where the reins need to be put
I think Colm is referencing that as well, where he says development squads have achieved a place of prominence above clubs and schools and even education. They can be dangerous in the wrong hands. All the stuff you're talking about in terms of human development of a young person is fine. But I think a lot of these development squads, what they actually have a reverse effect in that they channel some people out of the game. People who'd be getting game time at clubs are not as involved. Obviously, this varies from county to county. I think the interesting thing about Pat Gilroy and Colm O'Rourke's piece is this conversation we've had about the fun and joy and whether that's being lost in this race to absolute elitism. It has been an ongoing debate. Again, Tom Dempsey talked about that Wexford team was full of characters, and he said Liam Griffin, who was one of the more charismatic managers we've had in Gaelic games, embraced the characters rather than trying to squeeze the personality from them. And you guys like Larry O'Gorman and Shawnee Flood and Martin Story were big, big personalities. And Tom was lamenting the fact that the players today, you have as many big personalities, but we just don't get to see them as much, because he says it's almost seen, Tom's argument was, it was almost a sign of weakness, it's perceived, to show who you are. And he pointed out, and a number of people have pointed out, I think that's why so many people related to Kobe MacDonald this summer. We just had this guy, he was a surf dude playing football, and you could see his personality, he was fearless on the pitch. And David Clifford has had so many supporters down the year because he's so expressive. We need that expression on and off the pitch, I think, in a competitive environment where kids have so many choices. If they're going to gravitate towards GAA, we need to see more and more of who the stars are.
The Sunday Paper Review.
On Off the Ball.
This is a free Off the Ball podcast. For access to the best in sporting analysis from the likes of Brian O'Driscoll, Andy Dunn, Kevin Kilbane, Dion Fanning, Tommy Walsh, Darren O'Sullivan and lots more, become an Off the Ball member today.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.